That's actually going to lead us to the next topic then. If we're going to talk about remastering, I mean, you're taking an original work and you're doing something to it, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to also remixing works and editing works in ways. And then out of that remastering or that remix or that re-edit, you are actually creating something new. And often people ask, well, where does the protection in that lie? And what I can say from the legal side of things, I mean, if you take it back to the basics of what I said before, when you've got a protected work, what does that mean? It means the owner of that protected work has the exclusive right to exploit that work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you're taking somebody else's work and you're remastering it, editing it, you've still got to get permission to do that.
Yes.
Because if you don't get the permission and you make you remaster and you edit or you make the remix, it's potentially infringement and it's problematic. Yeah. But let's say you get the permission, you might have to pay a royalty for that. I guess it all depends. And you guys probably would know better about that or more about that. But let's say you do have the permission and you've now added your own twist to it, your own flair, you've made it original and unique to you, then we've actually got a derivative work that itself is capable of protection, and then you may potentially be the owner of that derivative work, and now you've got the exclusive rights. Is that something that you guys experience, are alive to, are aware of?
Working with record labels, I get approached to do remixes quite often. And most of the time in your contract, you'll have ownership between you and the original artist, and then the other 50% goes towards the record label.
Yes.
So there's still ownership by the original creator and then ownership by you as well, but in a much less segregated percentage. And most of the time they'll send you like the stems or the assets of the song so that you can manipulate it and do as you like with it. From the permission of the other artists. So yeah, they do give you exclusivity to work with all of the material that the artist used. It's very limited to an extent because you're just getting waveforms. It's like simple tracks. You're not necessarily working with the software or the sound design behind it. You're just getting the basics of the song as it stands. So there's not much manipulation you can do besides what you're given. And then once you have done your piece, the record label will take over it, master it for you, and either release it on its own, like a remix EP or LP, or they release it with the same original piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question out of fascination?
Yeah.
Do they give you a guideline as to, you know, they've got a particular idea of what your Avi sound is like to have the remix sound similar to?
Yeah, sometimes.
You have to stick within that sound design.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I recently did a remix for someone from but they didn't give us a briefing on what they would like. So when they got the remixes back, they weren't necessarily happy with all the remixes that they got back. So I think a briefing is very important, especially when you want a specific thing for your release. And most of the time, that's not necessarily the case because of, like you said, a specific sound that an artist has. Like if you want an FKA mash kind of remix, you know, it's a lot more melodic and gentle and for festival vibes. Or if you want a remix by me, then it's going to be a little more upbeat and energetic and a bit more underground. So yeah, I guess depending on who you're asking, you're definitely going to get their style and sound. Mm. But I think a briefing really does help with understanding what they want. Yeah.
You know, I think the sensitivity on briefing also is not for a record label to box you.
Yes.
I always say to creatives, let's separate skills. Creators are very creative. Let them go wild. So you give it to them and you say, as long as it's legal, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. I do give a brief, but sometimes I always encourage that, having said that, can you allow the creative juices to flow uninterrupted? Which generally speaks against the brief. So I'm generally one not to brief. Mm. I always say, here it is, but I'm briefing, but I'm not briefing.
Yeah. It's a tricky one when you have too much creative freedom as well. Mm. I did some remix projects for What is that choir that we have here? Not the Drakensberg Boys Choir. The Gospel, yes.
Soweto Gospel Choir.
Yeah. Which one did you do?
They were doing a recreation of Good Life.
Good Life, Inner City.
Yes, Inner City. So I worked with Ivan on that one. And
Luke.
And Luke as well. And they're like, yeah, sure. You know, you have full creative freedom. Do what you like. And you're sitting there and you're like, okay, I actually don't know what to do because... Now you have so much.
It's a creator's block.
Literally, that's how you end up getting a block. Because if you have just some guideline, you're like, okay, I know where to go, more or less.
Guidelines you must give, but again, I always try not to constrict.
Yeah,
because your sound is your sound.
Exactly.
Even if I don't give you a brief, you probably lean more towards your default position is the sound that you are
comfortable with.
Yeah, so I sort of know if I brief this specific producer or this specific, I know that the sound coming from there is along, you know, these specific lines.
Yeah, it was a really good concept because it was only for African producers that were allowed to do the remix. And we were working with some great guys from LA, Inner City themselves.
Wait, I worked on that thing. We are the distribution company.
Oh, is it? Yeah,
Gallo is. Yes. So now I remember when you say LA guys, I remember.
Yeah, we did it last year.
Yes.
And then they started an orca development where it's just, so basically the team have all these artists from South Africa and they give them these massive projects that have been quite famous in the past to do their own remixes. Mm. And it's a way to build like, you know, small businesses, companies, record labels, artists that are wanting to push and be more involved in music and media. And so,
I remember that we are the distribution label for
that. Yeah, so something like that was really cool because it takes the, you know, original piece gives us permission to use these really famous songs. And have creative freedom with them. Yeah,
that's awesome. Mm. On the creative freedom, I wanted to talk about a hot topic, which is, well, first of all, put your hands up if you haven't used AI. If you haven't used AI in the last 7 days,
music or related,
just in
music
general, your life. In your life, if you have not used AI, put your hands up. So, I mean, AI is like all the rage. And I wanted to know from all of you if you've experienced AI in the music industry, and if so, how?
So I had two of my guys last week playing me two songs. And I'm like, oh, great. Who's that? They're like, no, it's AI.
It's ChatGPT.
So the generated voices, but when I said to him, then play it again for me, I could tell that this voice is not
human.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, because they were playing me gospel in Zulu. And I could hear that the person, that's not Veneke. Yes. It's not doing the most as far as Veneke is concerned. But there was music. And if you look away and not know that it's AI, you would have said, okay, that's good. They just need to work on the...
Yeah.
Or you start giving advice, but it's there. We are now... In that era where easily there's a singer, but there's no singer.
Yeah.
I think it can be useful. I personally haven't used it for this, but I can see its use in, you know, organizing catalogs of music or kind of itemizing for your own peace of mind if you've got hundreds of thousands of tracks on a computer to help you organize it better. But the rest, I'm quite cheating.
When it comes to music, I know a lot of people that struggle to find vocalists. So like you mentioned, you know, using AI to create a singer is very interesting.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
That is very interesting.
They also have AI which can create sound libraries for you now. I have an attachment on my DAW now, which allows me to master my music using AI, which is so helpful, especially when, you know, you don't want to pay for a mastering engineer, you don't know how to master. And it gives you these presets where it's like, do you want to release it on Spotify or Apple Music or SoundCloud? Or is it on CD? And using those parameters, it gives you a default and it masters your music, provided that your mix down is like decent.
Yes.
So I tested it out. And it works like really well. So,
how does the whole world not become redundant with, you know, how do
it still requires human intervention?
To put it together, you need human intervention. But
the vocalist is not getting paid, or the mix and mastering.
Look, slowly we are replacing the human being.
Look, the vocalist doesn't exist, so who is there to pay? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, whereas you could have paid a vocalist.
Yes.
You know, that could have fed someone or given them money in that instance.
But like I'm saying, we are slowly moving towards replacing the human being.
Mm.
There's a lot of things that people are doing with machines that before we used to have an actual person. So I guess we must treat the music industry like any other business, where instead of having a forklift, now maybe they use something else to extract or to do whatever. God. It's now coming into our business as well, where do we need a vocalist or do we need to press somewhere and there's a voice coming, match it to the song that you're trying to
I think that's quite a controversial topic. Mm.
It's controversial, but we're going there because remember, we don't exist in isolation.
Mm.
When they're finding AI-generated solutions for other businesses, surely it has to move towards this business, which is a multi-billion rand or billion dollar industry globally. So there's no way that AI can exist and leave us out. It will disrupt our business.
It will. I think it's just maybe the input that we use AI for that determines the value that our music actually has. Because if you take, graphic designers, for example, who competing with AI now, there's a massive gap between the human creation and AI. You can see a difference immediately. And I think with music is the same thing, because the essence of humanity comes from expression and creativity and emotions and experiences, which AI is learning from the internet and not from life experiences.
But it's interesting how you learn how to manipulate your AI to understand your innuendo and your idiosyncrasies. I'm in a relationship with my AI. I'm like, you know, we speak to each other nicely.
Mine's my therapist.
And thank you.
My word.
But then it starts to like pick up on your tone and it's crazy.
It gets
scary.
To know you.
It's scary.
Is. It is scary.
Abby, you were mentioning the inputs and how important that is, and that was also something that I wanted to touch on, because at the end of the day, I mean, the inputs that we are putting in to AI when we are dealing with creating music, remastering music. You have this thing that does this thing and it works for you, but you are the one that's in control of it.
Yes.
And from the legal side of things, first of all, our Copyright Act dates back to like 1978.
Yeah.
So it's quite old. Like AI was not a thing. And so it obviously doesn't mention AI. Mm. And then now we're living in this age where, as you say, we can't avoid it. It's going to happen and it's being used. And then it comes down to, well, at what point is the work that I'm creating authored by me or by AI? And then you get back to the prompts or the inputs that you're putting in, and it comes down to a question of control. So as long as you have the control and it's not a case of pushing a button and AI is doing everything for you, it's different. Our law says that the author of a work needs to be a person, but it does also talk about computer generated works.
Mm.
And then we get down to, well, did the computer generate the work because you pushed a button, or did you actually give it enough prompts and not just like, please make a nice song that sounds awesome. Like that's not good enough. You've got to show that you've demonstrated some originality. You've put your own sort of sweat of the brow inputs in there to create something. And then now you've created this work. And then the question is, well, where was it derived from? I mean, how do you know that the output that came from AI isn't a direct copy of something else or doesn't contain components of something else? And did anybody give permission for that? I mean, I suppose I'd go back to what you were saying. You just Shazam what you've done and see if something comes up.
So if you were challenged to say, you know, is this your original work or is it AI generated? Do you need to kind of have a log of your process?
You do. Mm. You absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, if you are trying to enforce your rights, because you can take the position, this is my work and I'm now the owner of it. Let's say somebody else copies it. Now you've got to take action against them, but you've got to prove that it is your work that they copied and that you are the owner. So
there's that law thing. He who alleges must prove.
Yes.
So you can't just say that's your work without a...
Yeah.
So, it's really important. I mean, keeping records, and because again, we're dealing with a form of IP that's not registered. It just exists.
But what if my records are the same as Avi's records, the same prompts, the same...
The accuracy will definitely not be exactly the same.
Yeah.
There's definitely some distinct... like I said earlier, there's a sound that a specific person is known for.
Yes.
Even if you do the same sound, there's some...
It's quite scary because last year there was someone that made a prompt using Drake's voice and a song where they actually released the song on Spotify and it was AI. The song got about like 5 to 10 million streams in 2 weeks. They cashed out the money and then the lawyers came for them afterwards.
Yes.
But if you listen to the song, it sounds like a Drake song. It sounds like him singing. And because there's so many examples of Drake's voice on the internet, it's easy to recreate it and make it sound as identical as possible. Drake heard it and he's like, hey, I didn't make the song.
Wow.
So, you know, moments like that, you know, people get away with small things, but it's so big in the grand scheme of it. And like, as Abby was saying, how are we to distinguish that is an actual prompt or if it's someone that actually works with Drake or, you know, it's so easy to get away with that.
That goes to, like, that's why I said in the beginning you use your choice of words was interesting when you said stolen, even though you are not actually intentionally stealing, copying. It is completely plausible that two people are going to have the same idea.
True.
That is exactly why there's the concept or the notion that there is no protection in ideas. Your protection lies in the material form that idea comes in, because of course people might have the same idea.
Yeah.
If you had the same prompts and you weren't copying from Avi's prompts, I mean, it is what it is. That's not an infringement. It can't be an infringement because there was no copying. If this person making the Drake-like song is prompting, make me a song that has Drake's voice or a voice similar to Drake. Now you're pushing the boundaries because you are telling AI to copy
someone
or something that already exists. It's intentional. But it's all very interesting and the lines are blurred. And because our laws are so outdated, at the end of the day, all we can do is take it back to basics and just take it down to, okay, well, what does our act say? It says that an author has to be a person. It says that there needs to be a level of control. So at the end of the day, whoever's putting the prompts in AI needs to show that they control that process. Something's going to come out and the result that comes out also needs to be double checked. So, I mean, these days, AI platforms should be giving you the references. I mean, you should be checking where they got everything that they got or that they used, rather. So double check the references, but then also double check the terms and conditions on the actual AI platform, because a lot of the times there's T's and C's in there that talk about whether you can own anything that was actually generated from there. So it is all very blurry. The legal landscape surrounding AI and copyright in South Africa specifically is evolving. We rely heavily on things that have happened elsewhere, and not much has happened elsewhere. I know the government's developed a national AI policy framework where they're trying to regulate like the ethical use of AI, but that's still a framework. I guess the protection and enforcement of AI-generated works, how that's going to play out remains to be seen. But it's, as you say, it's inevitable. So we're just going to have to deal with it on a case-by-case basis.